This is Common Ground with John Tassone on your station for Talking Business AM 790. Call John now at 437-5000 or toll free 1-888-345-0790. Common Ground, highlighting the positive contributions made by the labor community on your station for Talking Business AM 790. Now, here's John Tassone.
Welcome to Common Ground AM 790. I'm your host, John Tassone. What do I say, Brett?
I don't know. It wasn't exactly the best way to end the season.
No, it wasn't. But you know what? I just saw on the Crojo online on sports, he got a $2 million bonus for winning that game.
Who, Manning did?
Yeah. $2 million. I think Brady needs the $2 million for his hospital visit today.
I think his wife's probably got him covered.
He got him hit so many times.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, my God.
It wasn't pretty.
Not good. Well, hey, you know what? Like the Red Sox, wait till next year.
Exactly.
Wait till next year. Wait till you hear who I have in the studio today. The infamous instigator from Johnson & Wales University. Mary Nolito Diaz. Welcome.
Well, thank you, John.
The instigator.
Yes. I wasn't too happy with that title until I told my mom about it, and she said,
It fits you to a T.
Yes, I've been calling you that since you were four.
So, Mary, welcome. And
thank you.
Let's talk about, you're going to have your own show here
on
AM 790 mm-hmm. on Saturdays.
Mm-hmm.
So I was the first one to scoop you and bring you right in
yes.
here.
Good call.
You sat with me last week and tried to learn a little bit. Mm. I don't know if you did or not, but it was a pleasure having you here.
Thank you.
And I found your bio, even though I don't have it. And I found what you talk about and what you do very intriguing. So that's why I wanted you on the show. Although Common Ground is a labor show.
Right.
But I do a lot of different programming here for informational purposes. So why don't you tell my listeners when you're going to be on.
Okay. So the show is called Journeys with Grace Point Grief, and it begins on February 6th on Saturdays at 10 a.m.
And what are you going to talk about?
Well, the show centers around loss. Even though my private practice is called Grace Point Grief, grieving is for any loss, whether death or non-death loss. And I don't want it to sound like the show is going to be really morbid. And it's very upbeat, talks about resilience, how people deal with loss of any kind. Mm. So loss could be loss of a partner, loss due to a divorce, loss of a job. Actually, in terms of grief and bereavement, one of the biggest calls that I get for one-on-one counseling is for loss of pet. So
I was just going to say that. Well, I was having that discussion with a group of guys who I have coffee with in the morning. Mm-hmm. One particular gentleman lost two dogs within 30 days. Mm. And his wife is really beside himself. They just did get another puppy.
Oh, they replaced it very quickly.
And they're going through some therapy with the dog.
Mm-hmm.
Want it to be one of those dogs where you can bring into the nursing homes and pet therapy mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And is really enjoying that. But I wouldn't have never placed this individual with doing like that because he's a big, tough guy.
Oh, you'd be surprised.
And once his two dogs within 30 days of one another. I just can't imagine that.
That's very difficult. It's funny because we have a little, well, she's 7 months now, Portuguese water dog who is in training to be a hospice dog into hospice. Because what happens with pets is they, just being near them or touching a pet increases your oxytocin levels, which is the same hormone that's related to falling in love. and it decreases our cortisol levels, which is the...
Getting divorced.
And it's the hormone that's related to stress.
Right.
And interestingly enough, it does the same thing for the dog as it does for the individual. Mm. So it's a mutually beneficial relationship. And I think what I found is that grief over a dog is... Are you a... animal lover?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you are.
I used to do all the animal legislation in the Senate when I was there.
Oh, okay. Yeah. There is a sense of total non-judgment on the part of the pet. You come home, and regardless of what has happened or what kind of mood you're in, they're always happy to see you. And oftentimes, my clients will tell me, my pet knew more about me and how I was thinking than anybody else. So it was a sounding board as well. Mm. You know, it's a true relationship. So it becomes very difficult.
Or when you go into the vet and you put them on the table and they just look up at you like, oh, my God. I mean, I consider myself a pretty tough guy as far as I don't show a lot of emotion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but when my dog had to go get operated on, I was like a basket case.
Absolutely.
I was
absolutely
a basket case.
And there is actually a gender difference in grieving. Hmm. Men tend to throw themselves back into work, where women are more likely to stay in that place of grief until they get through it.
Hmm. What about children?
Children. Well, actually, my first show is on children dealing with grief. I have...
I don't want to ruin your show. But
no, but that's okay. I have a guest speaker who's coming on. He, Ryan Loisel, he is the executive director of Friends Way, which is the only nonprofit in Rhode Island that deals with children and grieving. Mm-hmm. That's a hard question to answer, John, because it's based on developmental stages. So it really depends on how old the child is, number one, and look at developmentally, psychosocial, emotional. And then also looking at, there's a lot of literature on the attachment with anyone, but speaking of children, the attachment the child has with the individual who has died also is a big variable into how they grieve. Mm-hmm. You know, little kids take it literally. Dad's gone. Oh, when's he coming back? Or mom's in heaven.
Right.
But then as they get older, they understand the mortality, and they understand that this is the end.
Hmm. What about I see a lot with like over the past week they've been talking about that D-Strong, that young boy, and all the things that, you know, him becoming famous. It's just very heartbreaking to see a child of that age going through what they're going through. I can't imagine what the parents are going through and how difficult that is. Knowing that it could be today, it could be tomorrow, it could be a week from today.
Well, as you know from our conversation, I also work with people at end of life. I've been volunteering at hospice for several years, and I'm with people for their last 6 months of life. And very often I'm there when they're actively dying and I'm sitting vigil. I see it differently than you do. Even when my client's family will say to me, I can't believe my father is going to die in 2 weeks. And my response is, your father's going to live for two more weeks. And isn't that such a wonderful opportunity that you have, that you know how long he has, and you can fill the end of his life with the most amount of dignity and respect and make that very meaningful. And I think it's the same thing with D. Strong. There's a lot to leaving a legacy, and there's a lot to meaning making in someone's death, if you can make some meaning out of how this could possibly happen with a young child or whatever. And I think that's what's happening with D. Strong. Everybody is jumping on the bandwagon, and yes, it's very difficult for his parents. I don't know. You'd be amazed at what some kids will say or do or react to very differently than we do. But I imagine the parents will be very lonely and sad when he does die. But I think it's a wonderful effort.
What broke my heart the most, seeing that pick up his sister. the little baby and kiss her on the forehead. You're listening to Common Ground AM 790. I'm your host, Sean Tassone. We'll be right back. Are you stressing about finding money for college? Finding the colleges that will give you the student the most regardless of your income or asset levels? Call College Advisors Group at 401-821-0080 or visit them online at collegeadvisorsgroup.com for help. Almost all families receive money for college. Don't forget to get yours. If you need help for college timeline, finding colleges, completing forms, learning about best college loans for your family, call College Advisors Group for a free consultation in person or by phone at 821-0080 or email them at team@collegeadvisorsgroup.com. Welcome back to Common Ground AM 790. I'm your host, Sean Tassone. Mary Nalillo Diaz is in the house from Johnson & Wales. She's called on campus the instigator. I love it, Mary. I love it.
I know you do.
The instigator. And Mary's got a show coming up on February 6th.
Saturday at 10. Journeys with Grace Point. Grief.
You got to listen to it. It's fascinating. Fascinating. And that's why I asked Mary to come on my show today. You know, there's a lot of people out there that, and I don't know if this is something that you do, but I'm just going to throw it on the table and we can talk about it. Talk to people who have passed. You know, I always say to my dad, and thank God he's still living, I wish I could have a half hour of my time with my grandmother and grandfather again as a little kid growing up in an Italian household, the three deckers in Providence,
yep,
and macaroni on Sundays with the meatballs, you know, and then all of a sudden I'm 19 and they're gone. I would love to have that conversation with them again. For a half hour. But, you know, I hear, you know, you can go to these, these psychics, or you can go to these people and talk to people who are deceased. Is that something that you do?
I don't. I'm not an empath, but I do believe in it. Working with hospice, we call them angel stories. And you cannot deny what happens either at the point of death where they're struggling between two worlds and they're talking to people who have passed, but they're talking to you in the room at the same time. And I remember one woman saying, wait a minute, I'm not ready to go yet. I have to have this conversation and I have to play a game of cards. And we asked her, who are you talking to? I'm talking to those people over there and my husband. They won't leave me alone, but I'm not going yet. So that's in the transition. And then afterwards, you, oh my goodness, there's just so many angel stories, John, of the most, I would think the naysayer would call them coincidences, but I don't because I've just seen them so often, the symbols, the signs. Now with mediums, I've heard a lot of them. Some of them are better than others, but I did have the opportunity to go to see the Long Island medium, Teresa, and I was absolutely floored at the amount of information that she had. She came right up to me and said, your father's here. And I thought, there's 3,000 people here. She could, you know, most of us probably have lost our father. But then she started to give me all this information, and I was aghast. Because she doesn't know me. She doesn't know my name. And she had all this information. And to me, my father comes all the time. Mm. Whenever I smell a cigar, or I always see him coming with a custard pie, bringing me a custard pie. Mm. But I've heard it so often with so many of my clients. So what I might do with my clients, there's something in the field of psychology that uses a technique. It's called the empty chair technique, where you put something in the chair, a person, an emotion, or whatever, and you have your client work with that. And oftentimes when I put their loved one who they've lost in the chair and ask them to have a conversation, they're able to have conversations that they never were able to have, particularly if it was a sudden death. And all the regrets that they've been holding on to, you know, should have, could have, would have, they are allowed to at least visualize and go through that process, and that is very therapeutic for them.
Hmm.
But did I answer your question?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you did.
Okay.
Because I find that you know, in today's society, you know, our lives are so on a fast track all the time, and it's really not a lot to say to someone until they're gone.
Well, there is a lot of time. It's just that we let the time go by, thinking we'll always have the opportunity,
right.
And then one day we realize we don't. So, you know, that brings to mind that whole existential piece of, you know, not just living for the moment, but always tell people how you feel at that given time, because so often when my clients are dealing with regret of not being able to have said or done something. That's why, going back to my last conversation, why I believe that the family who said, oh my goodness, my father's going to die in 2 weeks, is, no, he's going to live. And look, you won't have any regrets because you have these 2 weeks to tell him whatever you want to say and hold him and hug him and all of those things. And the regrets really complicate the grief. So.
I think the regrets are when the sudden death happens. When you don't get that opportunity.
I can't make that general statement because oftentimes there's regrets when there's a complicated relationship with the individual. And even if the person passes a natural, you know, due to natural causes in their 80s, it still can cause a lot of regrets. Maybe you've ostracized them. You haven't spoken to them in many years. And you never thought about the day was going to come where you wouldn't be able to speak to them again. I thought you were going to ask me, what about when people who have lost someone talk to other people about what they should do, or people, well-meaning people,
that's exactly what I asked you.
People don't know what to say to people who are grieving. And usually they, you know, open mouth, insert foot.
Right.
Always trying to be caring.
Helpful.
Helpful, but oftentimes giving them lots of advice about what they should do because that's what they did. Throw your husband's clothes out immediately. As soon as you get back from the funeral, get rid of anything from him because it's just going to, you know, extend your grief. No. And someone else will say, no, I hold on to all my husband's clothes. I sleep with his flannel shirt at night. No, there's no right or wrong way to grieve.
Right.
So when people start to tell you, you get very defensive. And what I hear a lot from my clients is no one's around. Everybody was around after the funeral.
Right.
They came over with, you know, food to eat and calling me, how are you? And little by little, that tapered off and they went back to their lives. And they don't realize that I'm still feeling the way I was and I need someone to talk to. You know, there's a wonderful quote by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, and it is, there is no grief like the grief that does not speak. You must talk about how you're feeling. Because you're just going to eat it, you're going to bury it, it's going to find its way. Ulcers, migraines, and everything else that can occur.
Mm. Now, what do you teach at JWU?
Primarily, I teach counseling psychology. We being myself and three of my colleagues, designed a major in counseling psychology 5 years ago, and we had our first graduating class last May. So these folks are all getting ready to go on to graduate programs in mental health counseling, addictions counseling, school counseling, marriage and family. So I teach most of those very specific courses around techniques and therapy and how to be a counselor. One of the biggest things in the field right now is multicultural counseling, that we in the United States tend to always use a Western perspective when we're counseling, and you can't use that with this melting pot that we have. Not everybody thinks the way we do. And when I was I had the opportunity to go to the University of Zululand in South Africa, which was definitely in bush country, And there's 11 or 12 tribes, but I only dealt with the Zulus. And they were all, the students were all victims of the apartheid. And so once that was over, the government gave them all scholarships to go to college. So there's this big university smack in the middle of nowhere. And these students were studying counseling and social work. So I went there on a Fulbright, and I spent a few weeks with them and talked to them about not only Western counseling techniques, but some of their own kind of Zulu beliefs and values. And I was especially interested in their views on death, the whole death and dying process, because they still believe in the witch doctor. And what I learned was they all have these little, the name of them escapes me, these little buildings in their backyard, and that's where they bury all their ancestors. And so they don't believe in a higher power. They believe that the ancestors have all the answers. And so whenever they have a question or they're grieving about something, they just go and ask the ancestors, what should they do?
Hmm.
So, yeah, it's really fascinating. Fascinating to study other cultures. Hmm. So I teach counseling psychology primarily. Once in a while, I'll teach an intro psychology class to the general JWU population because they all need to take that. And I also teach sociology. Because I think I'm more of a social psychologist than anything else.
I will talk about more about that when you come back. You're listening to Common Ground, AM 790. I'm your host, John Tassone. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Common Ground, AM 790. I'm your host, John Tassone. Mary Nalillo Diaz is in the house. The troublemaker over JWU. Instigator. I love it, Mary. I love that. You should have called your show The Instigator. But Mary is someone who does a lot of work with hospice.
Mm-hmm.
I find that intriguing. Intriguing to the point where I've been there a couple of times last year at hospice. I have to give the nurses and the staff at those facilities the utmost respect.
Oh, they are wonderful.
And the amount of, you know, you got to deal with that every day.
Yes.
You got to deal with families every day. You got to deal with the wicked stepchild every day. And the dysfunctional families
mm-hmm.
every day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because when they get the call, you know, it's something where, you know, they go, whether they grieve or they cause problems. It's just amazing. The staff is amazing. But tell me what you do when someone asks for help, when you go into a facility like that.
Okay. So there are several areas to volunteer. And as I said, I volunteer in two separate areas. One is in bereavement support, and the other is an end of life.
Mm-hmm.
So bereavement support, hospice will call me and say, hey, we have a patient at such and such a nursing home or at home.
So it's not the client that call
no.
family, it's a place. Okay.
Right, and they'll say, you know, they know the client and they know the volunteers, so they try to make
right.
a good match in
right.
terms of interests or whatever. Mm-hmm. They only allow you to have one client at a time because they know it can be
stressful.
Very, stressful, and it takes a toll, and you get very close to them.
Mm.
And then once your client passes, they won't give you another client until you're ready to go through that again.
So do you have to get what do they call that? I don't know.
When
someone passes, you have to go through, it's not like detox, but it's like
debriefing?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's not too much of a formal debriefing. We're all trained in self-care,
mm-hmm.
so we know what we have to do to take care of ourselves, and we can feel it when we're getting depleted
mm-hmm.
of emotional energy that, you know, it's time to say to hospice, I need a little bit of a break right now. So I do that. And that's the bereavement support. And I've also been running groups, which is some of them are general grief. Some are loss of child, loss of spouse, etc. but my schedule's getting really busy. So the only group I'm doing now is very exciting for me because I'm a freak when it comes to reading. So I'm running the Bereavement Book Club, which is actually at Hulatar tomorrow night, the Year of Magical Thinking, Joan Didion. And then the other side is End of Life, and that's when I would go into Hulatar. And it's primarily so the patients are not alone, that maybe the family wants some respite, they want some time, even to go down the hall and get a cup of coffee, but they don't want to leave the room. We are trained to when we go in there. Now, a lot of them are actively dying, so they have the morphine and they're not really conscious. But we are trained to go in and say, "Good afternoon, Joe. How are you? This is Mary. I'm coming in your room. I'm going to be sitting on the left side of the bed. So how was your day today?" And begin to talk to them and as if they were just sitting there having a conversation with you. Mm-hmm. I did that once. I was in a room for about 15 minutes, and the son came in of the gentleman who was in bed, and he had tears in his eyes. He said, "Thank you so much." And at first I thought, all I did was sit here for 15 minutes and talk to his father. But that meant so much to him that he wasn't left alone for those 15 minutes because the son was in traffic and he was running late. I had one patient who, she was a little curmudgeon. She was irascible, but she and I became very good friends. And she loved Shirley Temple. And she loved my iPad because it was such a miracle that any play or any movie she ever mentioned from back in the 40s, she had to do was give me the name and I would just show it to her. So we would sit on our nursing home bed and sing Good Ship Lollipop together. And when she was actively dying, which was kind of a surprise, at the timing, which happens a lot. You know someone is dying, but the moment that they choose to is not what you're not ready.
Envision, yeah.
So the nurse called me and said, "She's actively dying. This woman didn't have any family at all. So if you want to come and sit with her." And I said, "Sure." So I came down and I got on the bed with her. And I lay down and I was just rubbing my hands through her hair because hearing is the last to go. So I can tell you for sure that they can hear you right to that last minute. And she's one of the reasons why. So the nurse said, I said to the nurse, "She loved music. Let's let her make this, you know, journey, this transition with some music." The nurse came back with the Rat Pack. And I said, "Oh, no, she hated the Rat Pack. I don't want her dying listening to the Rat Pack." So I got my phone and I put on the Good Ship Lollipop. And I put it on her pillow next to her ear while I was lying there just stroking her hair. And my right hand to any God, higher power, she smiled and moved her lips to the lyrics and said, and started, and she passed doing that.
My God.
Isn't that gorgeous? Isn't that unbelievable?
That is unbelievable.
You can almost equate death with birth in terms of the power.
I don't know. I'll take a commercial. You're listening to Common Ground AM 790. I'm your host, Sean Tassone, with The Instigator. We'll be right back. The International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers is almost as old as the use of commercial electricity. Founded in 1890 by electrical workers after an explosion in St. Louis, it's the oldest and largest union in the world. Local 99 dates back to January 1900. Today it has 1,200 affiliated members. Local 99 is also committed to the community it serves, whether it's through efforts of its members, working round the clock to restore power during Hurricane Sandy, or its contributions to the hurricane victims through the IBEW Hurricane Relief Fund, or its recent work in the much-needed repairs to the West Little League Field in North Providence. Truly, a brotherhood in action can be a powerful thing. For more information on how you can join this great union, Local 99, and become part of its great history, visit them online at IBEW99.org or give them a call at 401-946-9900. Welcome back to Common Ground AM 790. I'm your host, John Tassone. in the studio, Mary Nalillo Diaz. And on the front cover of JWU in the fall of 2015, she saves the world one student at a time. And Mary is the instigator at JWU. So Mary, we were talking a little bit before we were on break about your mom down in Florida. She's going to love me hearing calling you the instigator.
Yes. So, she carries that magazine wherever she goes. I said, Mom, pretty soon people are going to say, here she comes, let's run. She's going to show us that magazine again.
You know, let's talk about your mom for a little bit, and we'll talk about my mom and dad, who, thank God, are still living. When you get into the public eye, like I did and you are, at Johnson & Wales, it's very heartwarming to see when you're in a foxhole and you turn around and your parents are right behind you.
Yes.
And some of your only supporters, good times and bad.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember my parents at 6 o'clock in the morning, the day of election, standing with me until 9 o'clock at night, going to the after parties.
Wow.
And staying out there. My father, was on dialysis, and he'd sit there all morning in a lounge chair, holding my sign with my sweatshirt and my hat on. And there's a guy who used to build houses, used to walk on the peak of houses, had no fear.
Are you an only child?
I am not. Oh. I have two brothers and a sister. But my point is that parents of our parents' ages do anything they can for their children and want them to succeed.
Oh, absolutely.
So you had another story that you wanted to share with me on the air about the last issue of someone who was passing away.
Well, so actually, it ties into the moniker of the instigator, because what I try to do is bring my experiences outside the classroom into the classroom. And I often tell my students, I know that you have blinders on. You don't want to see what's going on in the world. You just are, you know, focused on graduating from school, paying off those debts. So for the next
100 years of paying.
the next 11 weeks, I'm going to rip those blinders off, and I'm going to force you to see the world that is your world. And you can decide once the trimester is over whether you want to put the blinders back on or you want to keep them off and see the world.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at the same time that I'm espousing this message, I had an end-of-life patient who was 58. And she had a whole bucket list. I want Dell's lemonade. I want clam cakes and chowder from Galilee. And we did all those things. One of the things she wanted to do was drive in a convertible up to Boston with her hair flying, listening to 70s tunes, and we did that. And it was just, I was so humbled to be in her presence. And she was, she had a strong sense of humor. But as it got toward the end, we didn't know it was the end, but she said, you know, I want to leave a legacy. And I know I've left a legacy with my children and my grandchildren and probably with my clients, because she had been a mental health counselor. But I'm just wondering, do you think I could come and talk to your students in the class? I said, sure, why not? She said, have them write up some questions for me, so I have them a day ahead of time. I said, okay. So my students were very uncomfortable. What can we say? What can we ask her? I said, you can ask her anything you want. No holds barred? No holds barred. And she came, and the day before, she said, do you think you can videotape this? Well, I said, yeah, sure. So she came, and we videotaped it. She got all dressed up, all her makeup and everything. She came in with her grandson. She spoke straight for 5 hours to two of my classes, answered every question that they had written down. You know, are you afraid to die? How do you think it's going to happen? Who do you want with you? And at the end, she just looked at everybody and said, Well, I finished my bucket list because I wanted to leave a legacy, and now I know I will live on forever and ever in the counseling program at Johnson & Wales because I'm on video. Mm. And so, and she passed 1 month later. Mm. And so I show that every trimester when I have a new class. Everyone kind of knows, oh, look who's coming in. And I'm actually, I edited a piece of that as a podcast that I'm going to play on one of my shows, because I think people need to hear what someone is telling other people about what it's like to know that you have less than a month or two to live. She was awesome.
So what got you in this field?
Yeah, that's the question everybody asks. Like, why? Why would you want to work with death? I was just born into it. I don't think I had a choice. I think I was just born into it.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, if you get a chance to read the whole article, it talks about how badly I wanted to be a funeral director, a mortician. And my mother was the hairdresser. So I learned how to read, reading obituaries. So it's been in my life for as long as I can remember.
When is your show coming on, Mary?
Saturday, starting February 6th, Saturdays at 10 a.m., Journeys with Grace Point Grief. Your host is Mary Dias.
Thank you, Mary. Thank you for joining us. Love to have you on again.
Okay, John.
You're listening to Common Ground AM 790. I'm your host, John Tassoni. Have a great week.